Welcome to Island Conversations with Sherry Bracken, where we talk about issues facing our Big Island community. Island Conversations, Sunday mornings on KWXX at 6:30 and on B97B93 at 7 a.m. Or listen anytime at kwxx.com. Island Conversations, brought to you by KTA Superstores, where you're someone special every day since 1916. Now, here's your host and producer, Sherry Bracken.
Aloha, everybody. I'm Sherry Bracken, and you're listening to a bonus podcast of Island Conversations. After the July 4th and 5th earthquakes in Central California, several folks on the Big Island of Hawaii were asking about the impact, potentially, of any California earthquake on Hawaii. And so I talked to a seismologist from Hawaiian Volcano Observatory to get some information. And we also talk at the very end about Mauna Loa. So here's your bonus podcast about earthquakes and Mauna Loa. Aloha. Today we're talking with Brian Shiro, who is the Seismic Network Manager at the USGS Hawaiian Volcano Observatory. He oversees instrumentation, data processing, analysis, and distribution from about 100 stations here in the state of Hawaii. Brian also manages HVO's formal response to significant earthquakes and volcanic activity. He serves as the Advanced National Seismic System Regional Coordinator for Hawaii. Brian Shiro has held a number of positions, including with the Pacific Tsunami Warning Center, and he has been at Hawaiian Volcano Observatory as a supervisory geophysicist since 2016. Aloha, Brian.
Aloha. Hi, Sherry.
What I wanted to talk about today was mostly the earthquake in California and any implications it might have for the state of Hawaii, but let's start with the California earthquakes. What makes the recent California 6.4 magnitude and 7.1 magnitude different from or similar to our 6.9 of last May 4th, 2018, a year ago, right before, well, right as Kilauea was erupting, and also different from or similar to the October 2006 Kiholo Bay earthquake? Tell us about differences or similarities.
The California earthquakes of this year, as well as the Hawaii earthquake from last year, are similar because they're both due to sliding along faults. We call these tectonic earthquakes. And they both produce large aftershock sequences, and they both had a large foreshock preceded the main shock as well. That's some of the similarities. The Kiholo Bay earthquake in 2006 was a slightly different type of earthquake. This was due to stresses in the actual lithosphere. This is the plate beneath the chain of Hawaiian Islands that's bending from the weight of the islands above them. And that earthquake occurred deeper as well. And so the earthquake in Kiholo Bay was a little bit different, but the 6.9 last year is more similar of a cousin to the California earthquakes. But in California, the forces involved are due to these two plates moving past one another along the famous San Andreas Fault. In Hawaii, we don't have that. In Hawaii, we're in the middle of the Pacific Plate. And so the forces here are different. These are due to the island weight pressing down and sliding and you know, moving along due to the stresses from the volcanoes, etc. So the forces are different in these two situations. In California, you have this motion. It's known as strike-slip motion, where you have the North American plate moving up and toward the right compared with the Pacific plate. And this drags along the whole continent with it. And so the stresses that it creates throughout eastern California into Nevada as well are what caused ultimately these earthquakes.
Right after the California quakes occurred, one of the USGS seismologists said the 6.4, the first one, she said it could be the quake or it could be a foreshock. Mm-hmm. And as it turned out, it was a foreshock for the 7.1 that occurred the very next day. What about the 6.4 would have made the seismologist say it could be a foreshock? What were the characteristics that made her think that?
Well, we don't know when an earthquake happens if it's going to be the biggest one in a sequence or not. So an earthquake sequence is when one earthquake happens and it causes different earthquakes to happen along the same fault or next adjacent faults. And this can cascade sort of like dominoes falling until the energy is all released. And sometimes one of those dominoes that gets struck down the line may be bigger than the first one. When that happens, when in this case a 7.1 happened, it got promoted to be called the main shock. And then anything that happened prior to that is called a foreshock. But you don't know ahead of time if that's going to be the case. We actually had an example of this last year in Hawaii. Another reason why the California sequence is similar, we had a 5.7 earthquake that occurred at 11:30 a.m. on May 4th, 2018. An hour later, it was a 6.9, and so that 5.7 got demoted to foreshock status, and then the 6.9 gets all the glory as the main shock.
So the geologists in California are saying that there will be thousands, 10,000 probably aftershocks, mm-hmm. and many of them may be as large as five. Mm-hmm. But if the 7.1 is considered the earthquake, could there be others at this point that are even larger than 7.1 along this same fault line in California? Is that likely?
It's not likely at this point. Enough time has passed that the likelihood of a quake that size, as big as the main shock or bigger even, is probably passed. It's not impossible, but the probabilities are small. In fact, I looked at the probabilities, and it's about a 60-70% probability of a magnitude 5 in the next month. Seems pretty reasonable there. Whereas the probability for a magnitude 7.1 is only about 1 or 2%. It gives you an idea of the rough differences between them. And this is actually due to a new USGS product called the Aftershock Forecast product that anybody can access on the website. It's a way to see what the likelihood of earthquakes at any given magnitude is going to be for any given time. And it's working pretty well for this sequence.
Can we find that website through the USGS Hawaiian Volcano Observatory website?
The USGS Hawaiian Volcano Observatory website does link to the earthquakes website, which is earthquakes.usgs.gov. And from there, for any large earthquake, you'll see a tile that says aftershock forecast. And we're actually working closely with that team right now to bring that capability to Hawaii in the very near future.
Well, that's good news. Yeah. So these particular earthquakes in California were along a particular fault line or in one region. What is the likelihood that that would then generate other earthquakes along other faults in California, which is actually riddled with faults?
The diminishing magnitudes of all these aftershocks is really outlining the area where the slip is happening along these faults. It's probably not going to go much further because the energy being released by these relatively smaller earthquakes now is not really enough to nudge those adjacent segments of faults to slip and create more earthquakes in new areas anyway. It's possible, but I think it's mostly seeing the extent of this. What's interesting about your question is what about other areas that are not next to this and other, you know, hundreds of miles away perhaps, other places? There is some evidence that remote earthquakes can trigger other earthquakes in different places. Basically, the shaking wave, the seismic waves from one earthquake arriving somewhere else could cause a fault that's ready to go already to just have that little nudge it needs to move the rest of the way and slip and make an earthquake. There are very few documented cases with this, but there are some documented cases.
Okay, well, that leads us to, we are maybe 2,500 miles away from that earthquake. Could those earthquakes in California generate earthquakes here in Hawaii, particularly on the Big Island?
I don't know of any examples of earthquakes as far away as California that have triggered earthquakes in Hawaii or changed seismicity patterns in Hawaii. So I don't think so. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I really doubt it. Having said that, the earthquake sequence in California did trigger an earthquake sequence in the Kosovo volcanic field, which is nearby. And so you can have, and that is not exactly in the same region. It's slightly separated to the north. And so you can have this phenomenon where earthquakes can jump over to a new area when they get triggered by an incoming wave.
Brian, I'm not familiar with the COSO area. Tell us where that is, how close to where the earthquakes are. Just tell us something about it, because I don't know where COSO is.
COSO is a small distance away from the earthquakes in California in Inyo County. And so far there have been about 600 earthquakes greater than magnitude 1 there that have been triggered by this sequence. So it's interesting.
It is interesting. I never knew that could happen. Now, everybody in California talks about, quote, the big one, whatever the big one was. So these recent two fairly big earthquakes in California, would you say they would increase the possibility of the big one or decrease the possibility of the big one or have no effect?
Well, first of all, I'm not an expert on California earthquakes, so I don't really know for sure. But I can say that when you have earthquakes occur along a fault, especially a large aftershock sequence like this with thousands of events, you're releasing a lot of that built-up stress that was, you know, took hundreds of years to build up in this area. That's going to take time to build up again. And so I wouldn't expect earthquakes, large earthquakes, in this area for quite some time.
Tell us the circumstances under which an earthquake in California could trigger a tsunami for Hawaii, particularly for Hawaii Island.
The good news about the tsunami risk for Hawaii from California is that it's low, because the type of motion in California along that fault system known as the San Andreas Fault System is strike slip, it's sideways. And so even the great 1906 San Francisco earthquake It produced a tiny tsunami, only a few inches high, that barely made it out of the San Francisco Bay Area. And there, you know, certainly was not an ocean-crossing hazard, even though it was a very big earthquake. And the reason for that is because most of that motion is horizontal, not vertical. So California doesn't have the type of faults, at least not by the ocean, that can produce that vertical motion. Now, up in the Cascades area, up near Oregon and Washington, British Columbia, that's another story. There's a subduction zone there where one plate dives beneath another, and all those earthquakes that happen are the type that can make a tsunami, including a large ocean-crossing tsunami.
Well, you used to work for the Pacific Tsunami Warning Center, so I'm assuming that should a tsunami be generated by any quake anywhere in the world, but particularly the West Coast, that the Pacific Tsunami Warning Center would know about it and warn us?
Yeah, that's correct. They would know about it, and they would warn the state of Hawaii and residents here about the threat. And the National Tsunami Warning Center, located in Alaska, would actually provide the warnings to the West Coast.
One of the things that I learned after these California quakes is that Los Angeles County has what's called a quake alert in effect. Anybody with a certain app on their phone would get seconds of warning that a quake of a certain size was coming. It's not a huge amount of time warning, but enough to not be in the elevator or to stop what you're doing. I remember that several years ago I had talked with one of the seismologists here, and then there was discussion going on, work going on about a similar system here. Tell us what the possibility is for us having a quake alert app here in our state and particularly on our island.
So the concept of earthquake early warning, which is being rolled out right now in California, Oregon, and Washington, relies on the fact that P waves are slower than S waves from earthquakes, so the primary and secondary waves. And so if you can have lots of monitoring stations near your shaking, you can detect those P waves soon and send that information ahead to the population center saying, we found shaking, you know, heads up, get out of the way, get safe, before the damaging S waves arrive. Those are the ones that cause most of the problems. And so this concept has been used many years in Japan, in Mexico City, to help warn those residents, and now it's coming to the U.S. In Hawaii, there was a study commissioned a few years ago by the telescopes on Mauna Kea to study the feasibility here because of that large investment. We found out that, yes, it is possible to have some seconds of warning in Hawaii as well with moderate improvements to the monitoring network. There's currently no funding in place or no mandate from any agencies for this to happen in Hawaii. The priority right now is the West Coast. I expect, though, eventually we will have this capability here one way or the other. We do have the National Volcano Early Warning System, known as NVUES, which was recently authorized by Congress and signed into law by the President. When this comes into effect here, we're going to be expanding our monitoring of the volcanoes quite a lot. And that expanded monitoring will have the side benefit of giving us this potential of giving, you know, extra warning to people for earthquakes.
So realistically, here on the island, which is a relatively small island in the scheme of things, if there was going to be an earthquake such as the 6.9, which occurred on May 4th, 2018, how many seconds of warning would people actually have?
Depending on where the earthquake happens, you could have more or less warning. And so, for the example of the 6.9 on the south flank of Kilauea near Kalapana area, folks in Hilo would have maybe 15 seconds. Kona might have more like 25 seconds. Kohala up to 30 seconds. That's the best case scenario for the warning you could get.
Why is a warning like that helpful? Give us some examples.
Well, some examples are that you could stop driving, for example. You could, if you operate utilities, you could shut down your generators. If you operate a train, you could stop the train from moving. If you operate telescopes, you can clamp down your mirrors so they don't get shaken. All these things, such as gas lines as well, you can close off valves of gas lines. You know, anything that's vulnerable, it only takes a few seconds to do these things, especially if you have automated processes in place that do it.
Is there anything else we should understand about Hawaii Island earthquakes in particular? And then I have one more unrelated question.
Well, Hawaii Island has a lot of earthquakes. In fact, we have the third highest seismicity rate in the whole country. So this is earthquake country here, and folks know that who live here. But people need to be prepared for this and, you know how to drop, cover, and hold on and practice it sometimes. Have your emergency kit ready. Do the great shakeout drill every October. You can learn more at the greatshakeout.org website. And just get ready for earthquakes because they're going to happen.
So, Brian Shearer, one unrelated question. I know that you recently took a helicopter trip over Mauna Loa. What did you learn? What did you see that we should understand?
Well, we had a beautiful day up there. The weather was perfect, and we got good views of the caldera. And, of course, it's not erupting. There's nothing unusual happening there. This was a routine visit to work on some of our monitoring stations. So we fixed a seismic station and a camera site, as well as another monitoring station up there.
Are you still seeing increased seismicity on Mauna Loa?
Yes, we do see increased seismicity above the so-called background level. It's levels that are not alarming, that are not particularly unusual necessarily, but they're heightened enough that it was part of the reason to elevate the alert level status recently.
When I last spoke with Tina Neal about this, she said that the background level was more or less 20 earthquakes per week, and it had increased to 50 to 55. Is that still the number of earthquakes you're seeing on a weekly basis, or is it more?
Yes, around 50 earthquakes a week is the average we're seeing now, and it varies quite a bit. It can vary 20 to 100 depending on the week, but average, yes.
Thank you very much, Brian Shiro. Aloha.
Aloha, thank you.
And that was my conversation with Brian Shiro, seismologist at Hawaiian Volcano Observatory. I'm Sherry Bracken, and this has been a bonus podcast of Island Conversations. Until the next one, please, let's all live and drive with aloha. A hui ho.
Thank you for listening to Island Conversations with Sherry Bracken, available anytime at kwxx.com. We welcome your feedback and suggestions at info@kwxx.com. Join us next week for another Island Conversations with Sherry Bracken, brought to you by KTA Superstores, where you're someone special every day since 1916.